eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley, joined by Jason Staples and Buck Sanders. You're listening to the Day After podcast, sponsored by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Buck, not really a whole lot to say about this one. I did think the atmosphere was pretty good. The crowd was a little flat, maybe. It didn't seem as loud as it had been. But what I saw in Kenan Stadium last night, Carolina just not quite ready for prime time against the Virginia team that we said all week is pretty solid.
Yeah, we said going in, all of us, Tommy, that if this Virginia team didn't make mistakes and turn the ball over, they were going to be tough to beat. And that's exactly how it turned out to be. They didn't make any mistakes. They didn't turn the ball over. They didn't get flagged for a lot of penalties, at least. And when they put the ball on the ground, they got back on it. So under those circumstances, it was always going to be tough no matter what North Carolina did, as long as Virginia played a really clean game. On the flip side of it, there are certainly some positives out of this, and Jason will talk more about this, but the defense isn't one of the positives. And, you know, we've got to give Jay Bateman and the Tar Heel defense a lot of credit because they have really punched above their weight class all year pretty much. And for the most part, Bateman has been able to figure out how to neutralize what a team does best. And that wasn't the case last night. That's a little bit of a concern. I thought they did a pretty good job limiting another one of Virginia's strengths, not letting Joe Reed get loose for long yardage on kickoffs. There are some other head-scratching moments, like the failure to call timeout. Tommy was screaming in my ear right behind me the whole time. Timeout, timeout. Why didn't he call a expletive deleted timeout? So, you know, there's some takeaways from the game, I think. I think North Carolina is, you know, a team that is finding some of what it's good at and understandings are. But last night, I just think the better team won, and I think that's the long and the short of it.
I thought you were going to go Stone Cold Steve Austin and say that's the bottom line. And that is the bottom line with that, Jason. We talked about stop Bryce Perkins, stop Virginia. I've been in Kenan Stadium a lot over the years. Most recent one I remember is Lamar Jackson for Louisville a couple years ago doing whatever he wanted. We said this is how Bryce Perkins is successful. You have to keep him from doing this. And he did exactly that the entire night. 30 for 39, 378, three touchdowns. He ran the ball. The long run, I felt like Carolina's defense thought he may was going to just run out of bounds. Looked like they kind of quit on the play. But that guy was fantastic. And it's not too often that one guy beats a football team. But That one guy beat the football team, did everything he could possibly do to will Virginia to victory, and they got it against Carolina defense that was, not too good on Saturday night.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a little bit of water torture type stuff watching Virginia's defense or watching Virginia's offense, because, like you said, you know what you've got to stop, you know what's coming, and there's just not a whole lot that they were able to do to stop it. They couldn't get him on the ground. And there were a lot of those plays. And when Perkins is healthy, and he's very clearly in the last couple of weeks gotten healthier, and this was the first game I can remember him playing without that knee brace on, where they would have him in the grasp like a yard or two in the backfield, and he'd still get a 3 or 4 yard gain. And that puts them on schedule, and then their offense is just so much harder to deal with when they're, I mean, we talked about that. You have to get them off schedule so that they have to throw it downfield. And the thing is, they actually also, this was, I think there were two basic things that you could look at in this game that really decided it. Number one is they averaged 4.19 yards per carry, which on the season, that's the most yards per carry they've put up against anybody except for Bill and Mary. And, you know, that's, we talked about that. They need to give up, they need to make sure that they don't give up a bunch of run plays, and make sure that they can limit Bryce Perkins in the running game. And Perkins averaged 4.67 yards per carry, had 112 yards. Now, obviously a lot of it on that one long run, but that's number one. They weren't able to limit the run game. And number two, there were a few big plays in the passing game that Virginia was able to hit. One where a guy came uncovered. It was just a bust. And then another couple where there were good throws, good plays by their receivers, and they just ended up winning downfield. But if Virginia's able to get big plays on top of what they do, then you can't sit on as much of the stuff that they do underneath. And they're already really hard to stop in that little possession passing game that they do. I mean, they're not going to throw it downfield much. And, you know, 30 for 39 tells you they didn't throw it downfield much, but the few times that they did, they got a few plays on that. And you combine having some success in the run game and then hitting a couple plays downfield, and that was enough, really, for them to come out victorious in this game. You know, I think a lot of it comes down to North Carolina's defensive front. I think they showed some of the wear and tear in this game that they've had so far this year. I mean, coming into this game with over 400 snaps for both starting defensive tackles, and, you know, not a whole lot less for the rest of them. And I think they started to show a little bit of that fatigue in this game, because that Virginia offensive line, I think they outperformed how they played earlier in the year when I'd seen them a little bit more and play. You know, they got the Virginia team that spanked Duke pretty good, but overall they were not as disruptive up front as a defense as they've been. And some of that you tip your cap to Virginia. Some of it you tip your cap especially to Perkins for when they did have him in the grasp and he was able to break free. But some of it is, I think, a lot of it is just the lack of depth on the defensive front starting to cost you in terms of the ability to cause problems for a team like Virginia up front.
But looking at the defense, and I want to talk about some positives a little bit later in the podcast. To Jason's point, though, Strobridge and Crawford combined for, I believe I just saw it, I can't find it right this second, 129 total snaps, if my memory serves what I just saw on the snap counts. They accounted for two tackles. And I understand that a defense, a nose guard, his stats are not tackles. But Strobridge's are, and two tackles between them. Crawford had one, Strobridge had one. That's incredible. The fact that Carolina was in the game, given that, is a testament to the other side of the ball. But do you believe what Jason says there, or do you go along with that? Is that it's a grind all year? These guys have played way more snaps than they should, but there's no other option. And then when I see that those two guys had two tackles against the Virginia team, that ground them up, that was just a fascinating stat. And not surprising after seeing it with my own eyes, but then seeing it on paper later is certainly just for me, it's a wow type thing.
Well, I'm going to try to figure out the question you have in there just to give you a hard time, as I usually do.
You're on schedule, but that's for sure.
I like to stay on schedule.
Salty Buck comes out after a loss.
Yeah, really? I didn't mean to yell in your ear to call a timeout. And for the reference, the timeout was the punt fake early in the game. I mean, call a timeout. I was like, yeah. Anyway.
He said it louder than that, just for the record.
I'm pretty sure they heard me.
A couple of things there. I do think that you're right about the wear and tear on the defensive line and the number of snaps that they've played, and that's really, it showed up some last night. But I think the other piece of that is that, their lack of tackles and the lack of penetration and whatnot that they got against the Virginia offensive line had to do with how quickly Perkins got rid of the ball. I mean, he just got rid of it so fast. And it was like, playing pitch and catch in your backyard. He had open guys. North Carolina was trying to man up on those guys on the outside a lot last night. And, that meant that with no zone coverage, Perkins could find somebody, didn't have to be way downfield, 5, 6, 7 yards, but was essentially wide open. And Perkins knows how to throw that ball. And he was money last night. I mean, I was amazed that in that short passing game, he made very few mistakes. And so, some things that North Carolina does, like Jason was talking about, the green dog blitz and whatnot, that doesn't work when the guy's getting rid of the ball in like 1.5 seconds. If he's getting rid of the ball in less than 2 seconds on a snap, there's not a lot you can do to, put pressure on him and to force him to make mistakes and get him on the ground. And that's a much more difficult proposition when he's got that passing game in his back pocket he can go to at any moment. And, it's almost like the old days when North Carolina's run defense was particularly vulnerable, and teams, we saw it over and over, Tommy, we would see teams gashing North Carolina on the ground, 6, 7 yards every play. And, this is kind of a, short passing version of that. He had 6, 7 yards anytime he wanted it, really. Even to run the ball at all, it was, came on occasions where, okay, I've got nothing to do with the ball now, so I'm just going to run it. If you look at the stat sheet, their running backs really didn't get, their running back had 21 yards, okay, and only 5 carries. And some other backup, I think, had a carry. But Perkins had 24. It wasn't like they were going to hit the running back in the hole and bring him to the ground, because he wasn't ever there. He only ran the ball 5 times. So I think their scheme had a lot to do with lack of penetration, and it even affects the kinds of exotic blitzes you can do that Bateman likes to do. It affected everything that the North Carolina defense, which, again, I'll say, has punched above its weight class pretty much all year. you know, I know that you shouldn't probably distinguish this one game, but, you know, that Clemson is their average margin of victory over their schedule is 32 points, 32.5 points. That's how much they are averaging beating teams by. And so when North Carolina gives up 1 point to them, that's just a measure of how much they have been, producing more than what you might otherwise expect from them. Last night, it didn't go that way. But the snap counts and how much time that Crawford and Strobridge have spent on the field, no doubt has put some wear and tear on them over the course of the season. Now they get a 10-day break. Maybe that'll help, you know, people get rejuvenated a bit. But, I think it was really more about the way Virginia's offense was structured, and North Carolina just had no counter to it. At least Bateman wasn't able to find a counter to what they were doing. I kept thinking sooner or later they're going to zone a bit on the outside and they're going to jump one of those short routes and they're going to get a pick six. I probably told Tommy that six times last night, but it never happened. And maybe that was just a function of what Bateman thought, was the best approach. But the bottom line is they just didn't have a counter to what Virginia did. What Virginia did was not, exotic or unique or anything, but, they did it consistently time and time and time again, and there was just seemingly no way for North Carolina to put the pieces of the puzzle that they have in a position to stop it.
Take a little break here, talk about JohnnyT-Shirt.com right fast. I still got another question for Jason on Virginia's offense, but I want to talk about Johnny T-Shirt. Look, it would have been important for you to visit Johnny T-Shirt last night because it was cold in Kenan Stadium. A lot of winter gear is at Johnny T-Shirt and online to be had. Very helpful stuff in a game in Kenan Stadium where it was in the 40s, 30s. Late in the ball game, but Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street, certainly the place to visit for all your Carolina needs, not just gear. They've got everything else. They've got supplies. They've got tailgate supplies. They've got every sport you can imagine, both soccer teams, basketball, football, baseball. You can get anything with any sport on it from North Carolina at Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street. And then online, of course, you can get everything your heart desires and your mind can think of Carolina related. They're alumni owned and operated. Great customer service, both online and in person. Great place to go. Visit them when you're in Chapel Hill. I know there's a lot of campus tours coming up here in the next few months for rising seniors or current high school juniors. If you're one of those people, like will be on November 11th, go buy Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street. Pick up plenty of gear for your potential Carolina student. And if you're a member of this premium message board at InsideCarolina.com, you get 10% off your everyday order online and in person, Johnny T-Shirt. All right, let's get back to this day after podcast, Jason. One thing about, and another stat about Bryce Perkins, you take away the long run, which they count too. I think he went 23 for 47. So you like that if you're a defensive coordinator. The big play certainly adds into more troubles. But, Jason, one thing about, and we talked about this in the pregame podcast, Virginia's receivers don't scare you necessarily, but they don't drop the football. And I felt like their job was to catch the ball and get down, except for a few plays on the tight end that on the busted coverage. I felt like Dubois and Yana, however you pronounce his name, number 13, he probably could get a mention on the honor wall in Kenan Stadium after his performance Saturday night. But those guys catch the football, contrasting that to Carolina's receivers who made the splash plays, made unbelievable plays, and then just couldn't hang on to the ball late. I thought that was an interesting dynamic, and it's why Virginia won the game ultimately just speak to their receivers' roles last night. Wanting to make a highlight reel, it was, they left that for Perkins, but they didn't hurt Perkins at all, repeatedly making the tough catch, running the good routes. I thought it was fascinating to watch if it wasn't for seeing them do against all that Carolina blue.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the 23 carries for what, 49, you said?
47, something like that.
47. Yeah, and normally you'll take that, but the thing is, you'll take it less when that 2 yards per carry is actually getting hit a yard or two in the backfield and then carrying it forward for 2 yards a carry. That's what makes it that much more frustrating.
That's a great point.
Is that, you know, you're getting shots on the guy in the backfield or at the line of scrimmage, and then he's still getting 2 yards per carry, and that's still better than where you should have him down. And that's what's so frustrating about playing him. As far as their receivers, I mean, I'm looking at the passing chart, Pro Football Focus right now, and it's what we expected. I mean, you look at under 10 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, he is adding this up. Let's see, 10. 16, 19, 24. So he is 22 of 24 on the pass chart on balls thrown behind the line of scrimmage or under 10 yards downfield. 22 of 24. And all of those numbers are very positive, including two touchdowns in that range. So they, like you said, they did what you expect. They hung on to the football. They found ways. They've got some size out there, and they were able to use their bodies to shield the defensive back a few times. They were able to get to create just enough space using different route concepts and so on. I mean, when you run snag or when you run basic short, you know, doing little hitches, little slants, things like this, that basically all you're doing is you're trying to find the spot where there's space and then throw into that and then make sure you hang on to the football. And, you know, they have a true possession passing game. It's sort of like their run game where they're just trying to run the football. Most teams would try to run the football to get, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 yard gains. And they're doing it with the passing game. They're going to spread you a little bit with that. And then, if you don't drop the ball, or if you're accurate enough in that range, that's really hard to stop. And I was getting questions on social media and messages and all this sort of thing on why, you know, they know Bateman and the defensive staff know they're going to throw it underneath. Why can't they stop it? Why can't they, you know, tighten up on this? Well, the thing is, first of all, the fact that they were able to hit two balls beyond 20 yards downfield, that forces you to at least respect that. So that those early ones that they had have an impact. Second of all, it's one thing to talk about that intermediate area where you can challenge some of that stuff. And he had a lot less success in the intermediate area overall than he did under 10 yards. But if you're throwing it 5, 6 yards downfield, there's not many defenses you're going to call where you have a guy that is responsible to contest that 5 yard route full on. I mean, you can bump and run and do some of that stuff, but the problem is they don't have the corners right now to really be able to do that. What you're trying to do is to play tight enough that when the ball gets there, you get there around the same time and try to either make a secure tackle or separate him from the ball. And they didn't separate him from the ball. Like you said, those receivers earned their scholarship in Keenan Stadium in terms of holding on to the football, in terms of just doing their job and not doing anything spectacular, but consistently working within the confines of the offense. And when you run triangle read type stuff, I mean, they're running a lot of zone in the secondary. You have to with what they've got personnel wise. At a certain point, if you've got enough time, somebody's going to be open in that underneath space. A guy can create that space. It's your design is so that a guy can find that open space in the zone, and then the quarterback puts it in there. And you know, it's, there's only so much you can do to stop that. And it's like watching paint dry in terms of the excitement level there, but it can be really effective. And the only way to really stop that is if you have the horses to bump and run that and just take it away physically. And that means you've got to have better players. And North Carolina right now in the secondary doesn't. I mean, they did get some guys back, but I mean, they're still young and they're still on the smallish side overall, not going to be able to do that against that group. And we knew it would be a challenge in that regard. I think they had a little bit more success there than I expected. But I think a big part of that, again, is that they also had more success in terms of being able to protect Perkins than I expected. And I think that's that was as big a factor as any. Is he, yeah, they're throwing short, but he's not throwing short, getting it out in every case under a second. He's throwing short with enough time to set his feet, hitch, and then throw. And you're going to have plenty of time to throw at that point, or you're going to have somebody open when you have that kind of time to throw. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I thought Carolina would press up more, get more in their faces, but you're right. When they did that, he was able to hit the longer passes, and he threw some dimes. I mean, we talked about his accuracy. I mean, he stuck it on his guys. And looking at the final stats, and who knows if they're 100% accurate, but Carolina had zero pass breakups. So that means on that nine, he either missed the throw. I don't remember them having any drops, but 22 of 24 behind the line in 10 yards tells me that his guys made the plays they had to make, and Carolina just didn't have anything for it. That, you know, a lot of people fuss about the scheme and the defensive setup. I mean, sometimes you get whipped physically, and they were able to do that. But let's switch over to a few positives. One of Buck Sanders' favorite things to do when we're at these ball games, folks listening, is turn around and tell me how close Sam Howell's getting to a record on pass touchdowns. And he did it again last night, Buck. And it wasn't the intermediate or the short throws. It was throwing the deep ball. I thought when he had an opportunity and when his guys were catching the ball, he was near flawless throwing those long passes, kept Carolina in the game, because that game could have gotten out of hand in a hurry, especially early in the second half. But your thoughts, give me your thoughts on this Sam Howell guy. I mean, he can't shoulder it every single week, but he's come pretty damn close to being able to do it.
You know, last night we were joking. Now there was a couple of times when North Carolina had a 3rd and 3, something of that nature. And then there were times when they had like a 3rd and 17 or 3rd and 20. And when it was 3rd and 20, I would say to Tommy, North Carolina has them right where they want them, because that's the pass that Sam Howell wants to throw. They've got like 2 plays for 3rd and 3. They've got like 20 for 3rd and 20. It's just crazy. But you know, the couple of things about that, Tommy, and you touched on them, and Jason talked about this at one of our earlier podcasts way early in the season. It may have been after the Miami game or the Clemson game, one of those. But anyway, we were talking about it, and Jason said, you know, here's the thing. When you've got a quarterback like Sam Howell, that is tremendous for the confidence of the team, because they always feel like they have a chance. You know, if you feel like you've got a chance, you just play harder, play sharper, you give it more, you know, reach down inside of you, because you feel like, hey, as long as I got this guy as a quarterback, we're going to be in every game. And that's how it's been. I mean, I shudder to think what that game last night would have been like had we not had Sam Howell. If we just had an average or mediocre quarterback, you know, instead of Sam Howell, that game could have gotten really, really ugly. But he gives you a chance. And, you know, going forward, and he's a true freshman, and I think there's still some chemistry building going on between him and his receivers, which Diami Brown really capitalized on last night. But, you know, he's just going to get better. You know, I think still, as much as we've seen from him and as close to the record as he is, which he's four away, I told Tommy after every touchdown pass how close he was, breaking Mitch's record. He's four away from throwing more touchdown passes than any other UNC quarterback ever. And, you know, he's a true freshman, new offense. You know, he's a phenomenal quarterback. There's no other way of putting it. Now, you know, do I question sometimes, you know, in RPO situations, you know, is his decision-making perfect? Sure. And, you know, do I think sometimes that, you know, he holds the ball too long trying to make a play? Yeah, I think that happens sometimes. But we're talking about a true freshman. And once he gets a handle on a lot of that stuff, you know, the sky's the limit. And, you know, again, emphasizing the factor that when you have a quarterback like Sam Howell, it's going to be difficult to beat your team really, really badly. He's going to keep you in the game. And as long as you can keep it close and you can get in the fourth quarter where you're down to like one possession to win or lose, which we have seen over and over and over this year. And a lot of that has to do with Sam Howell. So, you know, the future is very, very bright there. And, you know, as far as quarterbacks that are going to be back in the ACC next year, you got the Elf and you got Sam Howell. I mean, one in number two and everybody else is going to be not as good. So that's a huge advantage for North Carolina moving forward.
Take our last quick break. Come back, Jason. I got some Sam Howell questions for you, but we'll be right back. If you're listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, we'll be back around the corner.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Back day after podcast, Jason Staples, Buck Sanders. I am Tommy Ashley. Jason, Sam Howell, 15 for 29, 353 and 4, and no touchdowns. He's pretty lucky he didn't get an interception there late on a couple balls that were dropped. But he was one for his last eight. I think I saw the stat there towards the end. It was 14 for 21 for whatever. For 340 or something. Tell me what he did badly last night. And I ask that because we can talk about the superlatives all night. And I didn't see a whole lot that he did wrong. You know, I'm not a fan of him pulling the ball. I just sling it, just throw it, because the running, I understand why they do it, but him running the ball is just not extremely effective. But what did he not do good last night in your eyes, Jason? I mean, that's probably easier than listing out all he did well.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to disagree with you on the pulling the ball. I thought in a few cases, I mean, I said coming in, based on what they do defensively, you need to have him pull the ball a few times just to keep things honest. And you notice they did that early and had a couple, you know, 6-8 yard type runs that then they were able to keep that backside defender occupied. And that allows you to get some of those bigger lanes for your running backs on the front side, because you can leave that guy, gives you better angles. But beyond that, I think the one thing that he could have done better in this game is, I'm looking at the Pro Football Focus stats here. He was 1 for 6 on 8 dropbacks against pressure. When they actually were able to get some pressure on him in this game, he did not look as comfortable. He had 2 sacks on that, and these were not, in my recollection, these were not like a guy immediately getting into the backfield and find it where he couldn't have avoided it. Just against pressure, and they didn't get a ton of pressure in this game, but when they did, they do a lot of zone blitz stuff. And it looked to me like when they got pressure, he was just a beat slow in terms of identifying where the space was, being able to find a good window and getting the ball out accurately in those situations. When he was not pressured, he was really, really dang good in this game. And not a whole lot to nitpick beyond that. I mean, it just was a matter of, and this is what you kind of expect from a young guy, is if you can pressure him, especially if you can pressure him with some zone looks and some stuff that you're messing around in the back seven when you're bringing that pressure, then you might confuse him here and there. And there were a couple times where I just thought he was a little slow to recognize. Beyond that, once he actually knew where to go, and when he did not have a bunch of pressure, there's not a whole lot to complain about. I mean, you got top level quarterback performance there. I mean, that's winning quarterback play that you got from Sam Howell in this game. And, you know, if you're going to point at any factor as to why North Carolina lost this game, Howell's going to be down there at the very bottom of the list. So yeah, not a whole lot to nitpick.
Let me stick with you for a second. I'm coming back to you, Buck, on a different topic. But when he sees pressure and he gets pressure, where do you see the breakdown? I feel like maybe he drops his eyes off of his receivers and starts looking at the rush some, and then he loses where his guys are. But what I saw last night is when he had pressure, he still made – accurate or somewhat accurate throws, and his guys just didn't make catches. I know it's easier to break down in the film room, and I'd love to see it, but when he gets pressure, what is his issue with it that you can see just off of, you know, watching the game live?
Well, I think there's multiple things. I think number one, you're right. I mean, you look at the very last play, the one that went off De'Ami Brown's hands. That's a catchable ball that has to be caught on fourth down to continue to give yourself a chance to win the game. And that's a ball that when you look at that and you go, oh, well, he threw it a little high. Well, yeah, but he's under pressure in that play. And they actually got the underneath. They did a really good job pattern matching that so that the underneath linebacker was coming right underneath of where that little curl was. And if he doesn't throw that right where he did, that ball's picked. So, you know, you can complain about lots of things, but that's one where, in terms of location, that's a really well-located football because he put it within about a foot or two of where you had to put it in order for it not to be broken up or intercepted. So, and the receiver has to make sure he catches it on that. And Carolina's receivers all year have had some issues in terms of drops. I mean, in this game, you had De'Ami had 2 drops and Daz had 2 drops and Bo Corrales had 2 drops. And a couple of those were real key. I mean, one of De'Ami Brown's at the end of the game, that was a fourth down play that cost you a drive. And Corrales had really, depending on how you chart it, you could argue that two of the ones that I would chart as drops were also on fourth down. So that's 3 drives right there that you come up empty because you got a ball that hit a guy's hands or at least should have hit a guy's hands that were placed well enough and your receiver doesn't come up with them. So you're right about that in terms of not getting help from his receiver in certain cases. But I do think also there are situations where he does drop his eyes. I don't think that was as big of an issue in this game. I think in this game, it was more of an issue of not necessarily recognizing pre-snap where the pressure was going to come from, so that he was able to get and identify where the proper hot would be or whatnot as quickly as what you would like. I think that was a factor. And again, we're talking nitpicking of a quarter second difference between identifying it and getting it out versus, you know, what he did. I mean, you're a quarter second or a half a second. I mean, you're talking about really tight margins once you get to nitpicking at this level. So it's a, you probably hear the 6 month old in the back there. Yeah. But anyhow, I think
I love it.
Somebody is not having the best morning at the moment.
Aaliyah just wants to join in on the talk.
She's got a lot to say about the drops too.
Yeah. She's not real happy about the drops, but I think the other thing,
probably hollering for a timeout too, like Tommy.
Catch the damn ball. That's what she's saying. Yeah. I can hear that.
Yeah. I think the other thing is that in a few cases in this game, and this has not been the case, I think most of the year, there were a few situations where the ball was not quite as accurate when he was on the move as it needs to be and as it has been at other points in the year. I mean, Holland's drop on fourth down inside the 10-yard line was a ball that Howell could have put on him just a little bit better. I mean, he had a little more space to have that just a little lower, and you know, he didn't put it right on target. So that's another place where, again, if you're nitpicking and you're saying, okay, this guy needs to be a Heisman contender, what's the difference? Those are a few of those little things in terms of recognizing the defense a little bit quicker. When you look at a guy like Tua, Tagovailoa, and some of these guys that are just a little bit further ahead in their development, if you blitz Tua, now obviously he's thrown to the best group of wide receivers that probably you're ever going to see in college, but when you blitz him, he knows exactly where that blitz is coming from and is getting rid of that football so quickly on that you don't really have much chance to get there most of the time. And that's something that Howell does unevenly at this point. I think that's the place where next year, when you blitz him, good luck. Because he'll have seen all this stuff, and that's where the offseason helps you as a young guy. I think that's where the nitpicking can go right now is not quite identifying that as quickly as you would like. And then because you don't identify it quite as quickly, you're not able to set your feet and get it out in that spot as easily every time. And that's that. But I think, again, I don't want to spend too much time there because it's nitpicking.
Yeah, imagine that. We are nitpicking a Carolina quarterback after a couple years of you could write books on it. It's fascinating to watch his development. And it'll be fascinating deeper down the line. I thought, you know, if a ball goes through your hands, especially in a big time play like that, that's what separates teams that are ready for prime time versus teams that are not. And, you know, I don't like picking on kids specifically, but Corrales has got to catch those two. Dammy's got to catch those two, especially that one last. And then I thought Toe Groves maybe ran through the open space on one of those ones where Sam threw behind him, but I thought maybe if Toe sits, you know, he hits him in the gut for the first down there, or close to a first down.
That was, I agree with you. That was probably on Toe Groves there in terms of how they run that offense. And again, three drops on fourth down.
Yep. That's how you end up losing by seven. Buck, one more positive before we get out of here and talk a little bit about what the future holds is Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. I mean, my son kept yelling three-headed snake because there's some song named that or something, but Javonte was an absolute beast at times, and Michael Carter did what Michael Carter does as well. I mean, the running game, they had, 30 carries for almost 200 yards between them. If they run the ball like that these last 3 weeks of the season, I think Carolina's got a very good shot of meeting those preseason expectations.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tommy. The thing about Javonte is, you know, you see some running backs that have this quality. Not all of them do. But when you see one that does, it just jumps out at you. he cares not a fig for his body. You know, he's just going to throw himself downfield, and it doesn't matter if somebody is in his way or whether he needs to, you know, do a backflip to get over him and bounce off that turf, you know, five times. He doesn't seem to care. And, you know, backs like that, you know, are just so fascinating to watch, because it's almost as if, you know, they take themselves out of, you know, the human being natural fear of getting hurt. You know, we talk about the flight or fright response sometimes. With them, it's always flight and it right at you. So, you know, it's just a really amazing back to watch. And, you know, he's also another one that's just going to get better. And I talked about that in my column a little bit today, that whether you're talking about Sam Howell or De'Ami Brown or, you know, the defense or, you know, even the coaches collaborating together, you know, and Jason talked and I talked a little bit about this before the, while Tommy was getting his coffee before the podcast. you just see this team and as a whole, they're scratching the surface. They're just scratching the surface of what they can be. And you see it. It's not like, you know, we're seeing ghosts and just making this stuff up. You can see them getting better in tangible ways. Defense had a rough night last night. But you just see things starting to come together in a way, even through the losses, where you can look forward and say, this team is going places. You know, that they're making, they're moving in the right direction. Unlike at Jason's other favorite locale, Tallahassee. So, you know, it's just a different feeling when you see teams doing things that you can look at and say, you know what, they're moving in the right direction. You know, this is a disappointing loss, but you can see them and get the feeling like they're just really kind of you're seeing the tip of the iceberg of what they could be, and maybe not this year, but at least, you know, going forward, it gives you a very positive vibe about this North Carolina team.
I mean, we all said preseason that if this team makes a bowl, it's a success. This is a successful season, and they're still likely right now. I mean, it's not a guarantee, but they're still likely going to make a bowl, and not only make a bowl, but look at right now where things are in recruiting. And all of a sudden next year, the influx of talent, not just in terms of some of the guys that they're about to bring in as freshmen. I mean, you got about five freshmen that are going to play a significant role on defense next year. And a couple of them are going to be significant upgrades immediately the day they step on campus, because they're, you know, among the best recruits that Carolina will have signed on defense in 15 years at least. So that's number one. And number two, you get some of these guys back from injury. You get a Patrice Rene back, and you get a couple of the other guys that are sitting out the year. And all of a sudden, defensively, now you go from, can we make a bowl, to, you know what? Competing for the division is actually a preseason realistic expectation next year with the quarterback you got, with all the guys you got coming back on offense, and then you add that defensive talent. Now, you know, you may not expect to win the division, but you're actually expecting going into the year, expecting to be able to compete for the division. That's good direction right there.
Yeah. And on schedule, I still say, but it's crazy how every week, we start, you know, we go, oh, they're going to compete for the Coastal. Oh, no, they might not make a bowl. Oh, they're back. They win the Coastal. Oh, they're back today. It's Carolina football. And people listening to this podcast have followed it enough to understand that this is Carolina football at the moment. Mack Brown will get them there. So it's not Carolina yo-yo football at the moment. But this season is another one of those games, another one of those times. And I think the bowl game is in the grasp, and I think the bye week is huge for Carolina getting to that. I'm going to wrap this one. We've covered it. We'll talk about it plenty all week. Basketball season starting, so maybe I'll take a little break from football so I can sit back and understand what's going on, that what Mac Brown's building a little better. But Jason and Buck, it's always fun. It's never as fun when Carolina loses, but it's still always fun to start my Sunday morning with you guys. Thanks, boys.
Thank you. I feel like I get smarter every time I talk to y'all.
Really? Well, I appreciate that, Buck. I know that's all me. I appreciate
it. All you, Tommy.
Y'all be good.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.